Hello, hello. 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 I'm just auditioning myself for a job to say hello on my own podcast. I'm trying to say it in a few different ways. See which sounds most natural. Hello? 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 Maybe not that one. Okay, welcome to another Word Monkeys podcast. My name's Matt Brown. I write children's books. I've got a couple of series that you can go and enjoy if you haven't already. One about a boy who creates a time machine out of a sandwich, whose name is Compton Valance. And the other about a group of Year 6 kids in dreary Inkling Primary School who keep having to save the world from things. They really do have some bad luck there. If you want to find out more about me, you can. My website is mattbrownwriter.com. And if you want to see me reading the first of the Dreary Inkling books on live every day, then I'm doing that during the lockdown on Facebook. Facebook.com/mattbrownwriter. And if you want to see any episodes that you may have missed, it's facebook.com/mattbrownwriter/live. That's it. So today's Word Monkey is one of my favourite writers who I've read and got to know recently as well, over the last sort of year, 18 months. His name is P.G. Bell. The P stands for Peter. And Peter has written an absolute monster hit in The Train to Impossible Places. It's all about a girl called Susie who she sort of wakes up one night hearing strange sounds coming from downstairs, and then when she gets downstairs, she discovers that a train line is being built in her house, and a train sort of like roars through her house. Obviously it's not an ordinary train. It is a magical delivery express train for the Union of Impossible Places. So Susie is sort of like stows away on the train and gets to go and have some extraordinary adventures on this train. So it's a brilliant, really, really excellent story. And also I would say it's one story that I have listened to the audiobook for, and that's really good. Really recommend it. But get this, it was shortlisted for the Waterstones Children's Book Prize in 2019. That is a really big deal, by the way. It was shortlisted for the Branford Boas Award 2019, which again, despite my inability to pronounce it correctly, is a really big deal. It was also shortlisted for the Independent Book Week Book Awards 2019, all of which are incredibly big deals. It was called Great Fun, Fast Moving and Inventive by Philip Reeve. You know Philip Reeve, the dude who wrote Mortal Engines? And it was called An Exciting, Imaginative, Wild Ride of a Story That Never Lets Up for a Minute. And that was Robin Stevens, who wrote Murder Most Unladylike. She said that about it. So, it's good. It is top quality stuff. And I can recommend it because I've read it myself. And it was brilliant. Loved it. One of those books that I sort of wish I'd written. I'm slightly angry with Peter for writing it himself, but I'll get over it. Now, well, I chatted to Peter a few days ago, just as his second book, The Great Brain Robbery, was having its launch day. So it was actually being launched, and he was supposed to have a big launch party, but he couldn't because he was in lockdown. So I just wanted to kick things off and ask him, what's it like? What is that like when you can't have your massive launch party for your brilliant second book because everyone's stuck inside?
Well, I don't have to dress up for one thing, which is quite nice. I did most of the launch party in my dressing gown and slippers with a big cup of coffee this morning. It's been quite good, to be honest, all things considered. This was supposed to be my last day of a 2-week book tour. So I was supposed to have been sort of up and down the length and breadth of the country, visiting schools and libraries and places like that. So it's been, well, obviously a lot more low-key than that. But I had a fantastic sort of live Twitter interview discussion thing, thanks to Topster with the book review sites this morning, because The Great Brain Robbery is one of their books of the month for April, which is very nice.
That's good.
So they've been really supportive of that. And we had a 45-50 minute back and forth interview this morning. We had sort of people from across the UK and Ireland joining in with that. And Usborne, the publishers, have been wonderful in their support. They've been blowing the trumpets loud and clear, and they've been pushing it on social media, and there have been adverts going in magazines and things like that. So it's, the word is getting out. I mean, I think it's very hard for everyone at the moment, for obvious reasons, but I think it's had the best start that it can under the circumstances.
So this is book number two in your, is it, I guess, would it be fair to call it a series?
It's going to be a trilogy.
Trilogy. Is that different from a series, do you think? I suppose it is, isn't it?
Yeah, well, a trilogy is definitely capped at three, whereas a series can just sort of keep going and going.
Well, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Trilogy of five.
And however many more they've done after that,
yeah,
with
true.
Other various people, like Ewan Colfer's done a couple, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. But three, yeah, is where it's going to end.
Yes, but mine is a trilogy of three.
Okay.
And I'm working on the copy edits for book three at the moment, so should be getting those in sort of sometime next week.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So that's all still going full steam ahead?
Very much so, yeah. Yes.
So what does lockdown look like in the Bell household?
From my point of view, not much has changed, because yeah, I'm a writer, I work from home, and, you know, only venture out into daylight when I absolutely have to anyway. But I don't normally share the space with all of my family at the same time, so that's been a bit different. Because my wife and I have got two boys who are 8 and 5, and so now that the schools are closed, most of our time is spent trying to occupy them in sort of various pursuits, with at least a passing suggestion of educational merit.
How's that going?
The first day and a half were great. It's all been downhill after that, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
we were supposed to have a gardening session this afternoon, which was really productive, and I did loads of gardening. And I turned around after about 20 minutes to find that I was completely by myself, and found the boys watching Captain Underpants on Netflix in the front room.
Oh, fair enough. I know which one I'd rather do.
Well, to be honest, I can't blame them. I can't blame them at all. But it's fine. We're all coping. It has made the writing, I don't know, a bit more of a niche pursuit, because I'm squeezing it into spare moments here and there in between other things. But yeah, we're keeping to some sort of schedule, more or less.
That's good.
How are you coping with it?
Well, I mean, we are parents of a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old, and so I mean, video games just really come into their own.
Yes.
Our 14-year-old essentially is just loving it, I think, wants it to go on forever, because his whole sort of life has been gearing up to this moment. His lifestyle is ideally suited to a lockdown situation.
Excellent.
All of his friends are online. He just spends all of his time in his pyjamas playing video games. And his we've just both lost the will to try and change that. It's hard, isn't it? And you sort of think, well, because I look back at my childhood, and my youth was probably the first generation of like home computing.
Mm.
So I had a ZX Spectrum.
Oh, yes. No, that was our first computer as well.
And I used to spend as much time as possible playing games on that. The only difference being that I couldn't play with my friends who weren't in the room, I suppose. And so inevitably you get sort of stuck or bored and end up finding something else to do, which of course you don't tend to nowadays, because everything is just so incredibly exciting all the time.
That's true. Can you imagine trying to go through this lockdown without internet access? It would be
hideous,
horrifying. It
would
be dreadful.
Yeah, it would be awful. But then I suppose you'd just... It'd be awful for a week, wouldn't it? And then you'd sort of get used to it.
It would. I don't think I'd miss the entertainment so much because we've got, you know, board games and books and everything else here.
Yeah.
But the contact with other people, I think, would be probably the biggest strain.
Yes.
That's what I'd miss the most.
So tell me about, as we were chatting about sort of childhood, what are the stories you first remember that really sort of firing your imagination?
I can tell you precisely the first story I remember, actually. It was my mum read me The Magic Faraway Tree by Enid Blyton as a bedtime story when I was about 3 years old. And I know it wasn't the first bedtime story that I'd had, but it was the first one that sort of really struck me and I got excited by. Because, well, first of all, there's so much about The Magic Faraway Tree that's brilliant. You know, I wanted to live in the tree. I wanted to go on the slippy slide. I wanted to hang around with Moonface and Saucepan Man and all the rest. But it was the prospect of never knowing what world the kids were going to find when they climbed up through the clouds at the top of the tree.
Yeah.
That really got its hook into me. And I've been hooked ever since, really. Just the prospect of stepping into the unknown. I think that it was the first time that I realized that stories could take you anywhere. And so I remember every single night being excited for bedtime because there was going to be another chapter of The Magic Faraway Tree.
That's great.
And I've never really looked back, to be honest. Ever since then, I've been into fantasy and sci-fi and anything that gives me a new world to explore.
Yeah.
And just discovering it step by step and finding the people who live there and understanding the rules and, you know, the bigger and stranger, the better, really.
That's interesting, because I mean, I've always really liked sci-fi, but I prefer sci-fi when it interacts with the world that I know, if you know what I mean. I used to love watching Doctor Who when I was a kid, I always preferred it when it was set on Earth and things happened on Earth to when they were off somewhere else.
Yes. Oh, no. I must admit, I think those are some of the best stories that they do. There's just something about voyaging, you know, and as I said, stepping into the unknown and throwing yourself in at the deep end, especially when I discovered sort of what you'd call hard sci-fi as in my sort of early teens, where there is almost no sort of reference point to the everyday, you know, society as we understand it. And it was quite, some of them were quite daunting, and some of them were so heavy and opaque that, you know, I never quite made it through the book, but some of them, it felt really rewarding persevering and then sort of slowly chapter by chapter growing to understand. It was like someone had just sort of put me on a plane and dumped me in some random part of the world with no forewarning and said, okay, you don't speak the language, you don't have the currency in your pocket, you've got to find your own way, off you go, and just sort of shoved me out of the door. And that could be, when I was in the mood for it, that could be really, really exciting.
And is that still the stuff you like now?
It is, although I've sort of fallen out of the habit of reading it. I've been broadening for years. It was practically the only stuff that I read. It was science fiction, fantasy and horror on steady rotation. And the past, you know, decade or so, I've really been trying to broaden my horizons and read more widely. But stuff like Peter F. Hamilton, I do come back to now and again, a proper great big epic, world-spanning science fiction, which is, it's always nice to come back to.
Yeah, I always like, now you've just said that, it has reminded me of... there's a good joke in Men in Black 2, possibly.
The one good joke in Men in Black 2.
I think it's Men in Black 2. It might be Men in Black, but it's where you see you're like in the ship of an alien race as they are targeting Earth, and they're coming ever closer, and you eventually realize they get swallowed by a dog eventually because you realize that they're absolutely tiny, and you know what I mean, like bear no threat whatsoever. Mm.
I think that might actually be Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, is it?
It's quite possible that Men in Black borrowed it.
I think that Men in Black might have borrowed it.
That was another big influence. I think I'd stumbled across Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when I was about 8 or 9.
As a book or on the radio?
The TV show originally.
The TV show. Yeah.
I think the BBC Two were repeating it, and then my mum, or the local librarian, or someone, pushed a copy of the book into my hands.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. Yeah, another sort of eye-opening moment.
It's like, great, okay, isn't it? Yeah.
Science fiction can be really, really funny.
Yeah. But again, that bit at the beginning, I love that bit at the beginning, where they're talking about the, it's the sort of the motorway that's being built, isn't it, that's going to be going straight through Earth. And it's the plans have been in the office for ages, so people can object on them.
Yeah, on Alpha Centauri or somewhere.
That's right, yeah, and I love that. Just that those ideas, I think, when they're very sort of like rooted in like boring bureaucracy that we can all really know and love.
That's it. It's taking the mundane and sort of pursuing it to its absurd conclusion and blowing it up onto this huge cosmic scale.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. So you were into Magic Faraway Tree, and you're into Doctor Who.
Magic Faraway Tree and Doctor Who, and what else did I enjoy? I loved the Worst Witch series by Jill Murphy.
Yep.
That was sort of like my Harry Potter for a while.
Yeah.
And I've not read them for quite a few years. I need to get back to them. Asterix and Tintin, I just devoured.
Mm-hmm.
Like every month, I would have a new Asterix and new Tintin from the local library. I was really lucky. There was a little library at the bottom of our street, and my parents took me once a week. And the local librarian, Miss Joyce, was just wonderful. Like she knew her stuff, she knew kids, and you know, she let me have the run of the place. And she was always there. She always encouraged whatever choices I made, but she would also have something else on hand to say, well, if you enjoyed that, maybe you'd like this.
Yeah.
You know, proper good librarian.
Yeah. And were your parents big readers, or were you in a big reading household?
Yes. No, it was a big reading household. Very much so. Yeah. And absolutely no judgment about what I chose. You know, I'd find a book I like and I was just free to read it, whatever it was.
But I sort of remember having that sort of freedom as a kid as well. And I don't know whether if I've given my kids that same luxury, or if I've just been too ridiculous and you've got to read this because, or you can't read that because you've already read it. And, you know what I mean? And I hate myself.
I find myself doing that sometimes.
Yeah.
Although particularly my youngest is into, do you know, speaking of computer games again, do you know the Raving Rabbids?
I've heard of that.
Series.
Yeah.
They're like really, really big in France. And they've got their own TV series. They've got their own comic book series as well.
Right.
And my kids collect the comic book series, you know, the sort of hardback trade books. And they're great. They're really, really clever. But it's the only thing that my youngest will read.
Yeah.
Endlessly, over and over and over again. And the thing is, he wants me to read them to him, but they're dialogue free.
Yes.
So every night I just have to them. I literally just have to describe what's happening in the picture, and he knows perfectly well, but he wants you know, the time with me at the end of the day, and he wants me to share the story with him, which is great. I really, really enjoy that. But
yeah,
we have Rabbids comics non-stop for about a year now. It's driving me mental.
Good, get on something else.
Oh, that's, I'd much rather this than that he didn't want to read at all. Because he will, if he falls asleep early because we've had a busy day or something, we just sort of carry him to bed and put him in. He will be at the foot of our bed at 3 a.m. with a book going, you didn't read me a story. And we know from painful experience that he will not go back to sleep,
wow,
no matter how tired he is, until we read him something. Even if it's only 2 or 3 pages, he wants a story before he will sleep.
That's incredible. Because I've heard you talk about the fact that your first book, The Train to Impossible Places, its sort of genesis was in nighttime stories as well, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, that was. It started as a bedtime story for my eldest son when he was 5 or 6. Yeah, because I'd read him The Magic Faraway Tree and he'd really enjoyed that. And we'd gone on to a load of the other things I remember from my childhood. So a lot of the Roald Dahl, he really, really loved Roald Dahl. Very, very, you know, he jumped on that straight away, which was great. And then one night, I think we were about to start James and the Giant Peach, and I'd opened it to the first page, and he suddenly put up his hand and he went, stop, Dad, I don't want that one yet. I want a new story that nobody has heard before. And then he sort of sat back and looked at me expectantly. So
you told him a best-selling future story.
Well, yeah. Unbeknownst to me at the time, I threw together a load of stuff that I thought might be fun. Going back and drawing on things like the Magic Faraway Tree. And I thought, okay, well, exploring these magical worlds. He's really, really enjoyed that sort of stuff. And I enjoyed that. So I'll do something like that. And he was crazy about trains at the time. Yeah, as like a lot of kids go through a train phase. And he was in the thick of his at the time. So I thought, okay, well, what if it's like the Polar Express, but instead of going to see Father Christmas, it's this sort of slightly crazy out of control train that's just hurtling from one world to another. It all started from that, really.
That sounds like quite a good idea, that, Peter. You might want to write that one down, I think.
It took me a year before I finally did.
That's great, though. Because my son, my youngest son, he often, as a younger kid, doesn't so much anymore, sometimes does, but will sort of say, I want a story from your tongue. That's how he describes it. And he wants me to make up a story on the spot, and I am useless at making up stories on the spot. I find they always have to involve, he's called Sam, so they always have to involve a character called Sam, and they always have to involve like characters who are his friends who get into trouble and no one can save them apart from him, and that's sort of about it, really. That's as far as I get.
Most of mine were like that. Just similar sort of thing. We went through a big phase where he wanted me to make up a story every night. And the Train to Impossible Places was the first one.
Yeah,
that was the first time it asked for it, and I've never bettered it.
Is there now the expectation that you'll come up with a story off the top of your head that will become immediately Waterston's Book of the Month?
No, thankfully. Thank goodness. Neither from my children nor the publisher, which is...
Too much pressure.
Oh, it would have been a bit. Both of my kids have moved on from that. They want the professionals to do it. They refuse to read the book now that it's actually published.
Right. I found that happened as well, that suddenly they're really excited when it happens to begin with. And then they get over it very quickly.
They're quite happy to bask in the glow
of
having a dad who's an author. They refuse to read the actual book.
That's right. And do all the things like they'll happily, or my youngest will still happily sort of sit and wrangle a queue of other kids who want me to sign a book. You know what I mean? He'll act like he's my agent or my manager or something. And then...
Exactly. That's
but,
it.
But will he be interested if I read in the story, Peter? No.
No. If it's any consolation, my kids love your books.
Well, that's very sweet of them.
They're really big fans of the Dreary Inkling series.
Oh, that's really kind. That's really kind.
As my son famously said about, I think it was Aliens Invading My Talent Show, his exact words were, I laughed so hard I farted. Which I'm still waiting for us
to go on
the
jacket. That,
I was going to say, that's got to be a jacket quote, surely.
So listen, what's next for The Great Brain Robbery?
I'll be doing my best to push it online. My website is getting a big overhaul, so I'm relaunching that in the next week or two. If anyone does want to find me online, my website is pgbellwriter.com. Pgbellwriter, all one word. And like I said, it's going to have a sort of big relaunch at some point in the next couple of weeks. It's going to look all slick and shiny and nice.
Is there anything that you have liked about the lockdown? Is there anything that you will try and keep hold of after this is all gone and it is a dim and distant memory?
PE with Joe, I think. That's been my great discovery. Because ironically, I'm not in particularly good shape. I used to be. I used to be a lifeguard of all things.
Did you?
I did. Yeah, you wouldn't know it to look at me now.
No, I think that's brilliant. Where did you lifeguard on sort of the Welsh beaches?
No, in the northeast United States.
Whoa.
In New England. Yeah, I went and did Camp America and did a couple of months over there. So that was terrific. But I used to be in really good shape. And
so you're like David Hasselhoff.
I have the chest hair for it, yeah. but no, so I've discovered, ironically, now that I don't have to leave the house, in fact, now that I'm not allowed to leave the house, I'm getting more exercise than when I could, because I'm doing pee with Joe most mornings, which is terrific. So I'm feeling a lot better for it, and it's just, yeah, it's just nice sort of joining in, sort of going back to what we were saying about the great boon of modern communication during the lockdown. It just feels nice to be part of something that, you know, lots of people all around the country are joining in with at the same time, because we don't tend to have those big shared experiences anymore.
No, you're right.
To the same extent. No.
Well, I so enjoy chatting to Peter. Love it. Any opportunity I get, I try and have a chinwag with him. He's really good fun, really lovely man, and a great writer. And I just want to say big thanks for coming on the podcast. Okay, so if you want to go online and check out Peter's stuff, he mentioned his website in the podcast, and it is pgbellwriter.com. That's where you gotta go. Right, don't forget, join me live every day during the lockdown for another chapter of my books. I'm currently reading Aliens Invaded My Talent Show. I do this on Facebook, facebook.com/MattBrownWriter, and I do it every day at 4 p.m. GMT. If you've missed any, just go to facebook.com/MattBrownWriter/live, and you'll be able to see all of them. So listen, take great care, stay in, stay safe, and I'll speak to you soon. Okay, bye!